original script, and somehow I'm confused and I don't know how to deal with this, because what does submission have to do with this other issue? And maybe he's just changed his mind in the middle of the text and become discombobulated, and we have to cover for him in some form or fashion. But allow me the madness of following in my thought and sharing with you perhaps that there might be some level of continuity between these two peripheral thoughts. For he says, ye wives, be in submission. He said the S word. That was the word that caused the media to go nuts several months ago when the Southern Baptist made a commitment for women to be submitted to their own husband. And all of a sudden on every talk show, Sally, Jesse, Raphael, and everybody else is talking about whether they believe what God has already written in the word. And I just don't think it takes all that. I think it's outdated. I think that, what do you think about it? I just don't believe it ought to be that way. Good morning, America. I just don't think it ought to be that way. All kind of, as if God needed a vote in order to interact his will or purpose. God doesn't care what anybody says or thinks about it. Whatever God has written, he has written. Somebody shout in this house. Now, sisters, hear me. Hear me now. You know I'm on your side, and you know I love you, and you know I'm with you. I mean, I wrote Woman Out Loose, you know. So you know you and me is cool, and I wrote Daddy Loves His Girls, and I wrote The Lady Her Loving Her Lord, and I wrote I Do Woman I Lose. We have 52,000 women at the Georgia Dome. You know we're cool. This me and you, we got a hook. But I got to say something to y'all. First of all, you all spend all of your life getting ready for something that we never got ready for. You spend all of your life playing with dolls and Barbie and Ken and easy bake ovens. You've been preparing for marriage since you were 3. You've been practicing how you was going to cook for him and what you was going to wear and changing Barbie's outfit, and every Barbie had a Ken, and standing them up and performing ceremony. You've been playing wife for years, so that by the time you're 25 or 30, you actually have 30 years of experience on what marriage is supposed to be. But may I speak on the behalf of men? While you was playing dress up and what you was going to fix for breakfast for us, and while you was picking out what nightgowns to wear and what kind of lace ought to be on Barbie, we weren't playing marriage. We weren't playing husband. We weren't playing daddy. We didn't have no experience in it at all. We was playing with frogs and snakes and baseball and football and tackle and touch. And so by the time you get ready to marry us and the preacher says, do you? We say, I do, but we don't know what we're saying. I so, dear heart, you've got to give us a little time to catch up, because you got about 25 years on us, and most of us are running, trying to catch up to your idea and your concept of what marriage ought to be. Most of us did not even have the benefit of seeing what a good father ought to be in the house. So we're playing a role that we have never been taught. We're acting out lines that we've never experienced. We say we're a husband, but we never had husband defined in our own life. So either there was no father, or he was a distracted father, a workaholic, an axaholic, an alcoholic, a churchaholic, a sexaholic father, and we never got to see how to play our role. So if we stumble up a little bit and stutter a little bit, you gotta please be patient with us. God is not through with us yet. And I have to tell you, if there's one thing that causes a lot of flack, even many of you who are Christians and you contemporary 21st century woman of the 90s who come into the church, you still have a little trouble, some of you, with that S word. It's just a big issue of submission. Theologically, theoretically, it works. But in actuality, when you get ready to do it, you say, I'm making just as much money as you are. I'm grown too. I do whatever I want to do whenever I get ready. Mm-hmm. And it gives you a little trouble. And whenever I teach on marriage, and I do it all the time, they send me little questions. I just don't understand why I have to submit. And do I have to submit to him when he's not right? And do I have to submit to him when he's not safe? And do I have to submit to him because I go to church more than he does? I pray more than he does. You know he don't have prayer. But I have to tell you something, sister. I don't feel particularly sorry for you. I don't. Start the car, Holloway. Security. I don't feel particularly sorry for you. Because number one, at least you get to choose who you submit to. If you don't like the Joker, you can walk up and say, no, not you. No, you're not the one either. No, you too stupid. You too hateful. You act too much like your daddy. You act too much. No, you're the one right here. You. The Bible said that you were to submit to him as unto the Lord. As if he were the Lord. Your submission should demonstrate something. It should act out something. And I don't feel sorry for you because submission, let me define submission. Can I define submission? Yeah. Submission is never challenged when I decide to do something and it's something you want to do anyway. And you say, okay, baby, I'm going with you. That's not submission. That's cooperation. Submission is when you want to go to Burger King and I want to go to Wendy's and you say, all right, we go to Wendy's. It means that you wanted to go another way, and if you were single and by yourself, you would go another way. But you say like Jesus, not my will, but submission. Submission is so powerful that you got saved through somebody else's submission. If Jesus had been rebellious, you would have died and went to hell. But he humbled himself and became obedient unto death because he understood the role that he was called to play. Tell somebody, say, play the role. Now, don't feel sorry for anybody, it would be the men. Because all you had to do was submit. The text says, husbands, love your wife. It's not a suggestion, it's a command. If it's a command, it means that you have some control over it. Because it would not be fair for me to command Marcus Lamb to be black. Because he cannot, as an act of his will, do that. But if I command him to stand up, it is within his power to perform that, and that is a just command. So if God says, husbands, love your wife, it wouldn't be fair for him to ask you to do something that you couldn't, as an act of your will, just... But I have to tell you, brothers, I don't have a problem with loving my wife. I got that. I can handle that. I got that. I got that. Okay, that's fine. I love her. I can mark an X on the floor in her mama's house when the arrow hit me, wherever it hit me, and I knew that she was the one. I don't have no problem understanding. I love her. That's good. I love her. I love a lot. I love anybody that's nice and love kind of love. I love, you know, I love. I got love down pat. I love. Love is fine. I understand love. Love is in my heart to love. I got a dog named Bud. I love Bud. I love. Love is, I got love together. I love y'all. I love. I got love. I mean, I got special love for her, but I love everybody. I mean, you know, especially. I got that. But then he said, as Christ loved the church. Now, the reason I don't feel sorry for you is because you have to submit over a few decisions. But the reason I feel sorry for us is because he challenged me to love her as Christ loved the church. Do you realize Christ died? I mean, he died. When I tell you, if you are going to stay married, at some time or another in your married life, you will be challenged to die in order to hold that thing together. Your will and your flesh will say walk, but the nails of your commitment will hold you to the cross until the feeling comes back in your life, because you are commanded to love her as Christ has loved the church. He loved the church and gave himself for it. Gave himself for it. Check this out, men. Giving is our job. It's what we do. Receiving is theirs. It's what they do. We are called to be givers because we are to operate as Christ loved the church. And if we break that, we destroy order. Can I go deeper? This is what brought sin into the world. It was not the eating of the forbidden fruit. For Eve was a partaker of the fruit and nothing happened. But when she took what she had and gave to him, she broke the order, because it was God's divine order that the man was to give to the woman. But when the woman starts giving to them, y'all are gonna get with that. And anytime you don't have order in your house, the whole thing begins to fall apart. You gotta have order with your children. I don't care how much you love them, you still gotta have some order. You gotta have some order in your relationship. You gotta have order in your company. You gotta have order in your corporation. You gotta have order in the church. It doesn't mean that I'm better than you or I'm bigger than you, but somebody got to drive this ship, and somebody's got to follow. Somebody's got to change the tires, and somebody's got to put gas in the car. Touch somebody, say order. And quite frankly, many of you are bleeding to death because you are out of order. For no man hateth his own flesh, but loveth it and cherisheth it. And the commandment is to love the woman like you would love your own body. For he that loveth his wife loveth his own body. And it uses terms like nourish and cherish. Am I boring you? Okay, it uses terms like nourish and cherish, because there is a certain nourishing. When the woman comes to you, she's not everything that she's gonna be. You nourish. You nourish. You begin to feed. You begin to feed her confidence and feed her self-esteem and feed her integrity and feed her until she begins to be built up in her spirit and begins to develop into what God would have her to be. And then you cherish her, because somebody didn't cherish her, and somebody didn't respect her, and somebody didn't love her, and somebody raped her, and somebody abused her, and somebody mistreated her. And there's healing in your arms. There's restoration in your arms. And this is your ministry, and you are relieved from other duties, because he that is married careth for how he might please his wife, and she that is married careth for how she might please her husband. Means you got to get up off your knees and stop speaking in tongues and become involved in what it takes to make me smile, because we make the... And right in the middle of this, see, let me, I might as well touch on this. By the way, see, some of you make your husband hate church. You make him hate church. You make him hate church because he's lost you to church. You've gotten so deep and so spiritual that the woman he fell in love with, he can't find her. Now you're so busy being a saint, you can't be sexy. And everything has changed. And marriage is for this world. And you're walking around in the spirit all the time and never, never, never got time. You just reading your Bible all night, laying in the bed, talking in tongue, laid out in the spirit. Can't go nowhere with me. Can't do nothing with me. Just come up to come to come up to come up to come up. And he's sitting over there talking about, now look, enough is enough. And then you come home talking about the pastor and the preacher, oh, and that's what we really love, is to hear you come home talking about another man. We really love that. I just never heard nobody like him. He's so awesome. I wish you could get some chewed like the pastor. He had on the best. Going no deeper. Get the book. Get the book. Get the book. I ain't going into it. But these are areas that we need to talk about, because God is getting ready to do something awesome in your life, and everything has to be put back to order. And right in the middle of it, he goes all the way back to the book of Genesis and says, for this cause shall a man leave his mother and father and take unto him a wife, and they shall cleave and become one flesh. Leaving and cleaving. You can't cleave if you don't leave. You have to leave where you came from before you can cleave up here. And some of you, your marriage is not cleaving because you have never had a leaving experience. You're still married to three other people. You're still walking around with several other sexual experiences still in your mind. Issues and constraints and foolishness. It's 12 different experiences going to bed with you at night, and you're trying to whip Jimmy for what Paul did, and you're mad at Sally over what Janie did, and you're still upset, but you got to leave that. Paul said, forgetting those things which are behind. Oh, I ain't scared of you. I can ride it out. Paul said, forgetting those things which are behind and reaching to those things which are before. I don't care if you have to lay hands on yourself and rebuke the devil. You need to tell the devil, you ain't going to hold me to my past. I'm not going to keep having the same experience over and over again. The devil is a lie. I'm not going to shout all over the church and live in hell at home. You ought to start anointing your house and anointing your windowsill and say, devil, I bind you out. I put you out of my life. Paul, get out of this house. Freddie, get out of this house. Richard, get out of this house. Mary Sue, get out of this house. All those images and pictures that are in your mind, you ought to put all them women out of your house and say, I'm married to Janie Mae now, and Janie Mae is enough. Bishop, that ain't easy, I know. That's why I wrote the book. Because I know you was going to need it. For this cause shall a man leave his mother and his father, take unto him a wife, and they shall cleave and become one flesh. And he takes me all the way back to Genesis. Now let me jump on this. I'm almost where I need to be. Can you hang with me? He takes me all the way back to Genesis. He takes me all the way back to Adam. He takes me all the way back to Adam. Adam, Adam, Adam. Red earth, Adam, made of red clay, Adam. The clay pot that God breathed the breath of life into. And he became a living nephesh, and he became a living soul. Now you've been preached to, I'm just going to teach a little bit. It's all right. And it's all, oh, you got it over him. Breathed in him, and all of a sudden the clay pot started moving and walking and talking and had mobility. This Adam, this first man Adam, is only duplicated in the second man Adam. Neither Cain, Abel, nor Seth are in the same category as Adam, because Adam did not have his children until after he fell. So this first man, Adam, was not a man as you and I are men. His anatomy was not the same as ours. He was another species. He was created in the likeness and the image of God. But Genesis 5:1 says that Seth was created in the likeness of his fallen father. And so the sin nature passes down to us because we were created in the image of a fallen daddy, but not Adam. Adam was created in the likeness of a perfect God. God, somebody say God. Behold, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one, and besides him there is no other. And that one God, when he got ready to create a man that looked like him, he didn't create three men. He created one man. breathed in him the breath of life, and he became a living nephesh. He became a living soul. And the man Adam stood up. I don't know exactly what he looked like, but I know he was different from you and I, because you and I are male or female, but he was male and female. For the Bible said, male and female created he them, and called his name Adam. There are very few species left in the earth like this, but there are still a few, snails and whatnot in particular, who possess both male and female components and are able to reproduce within the composites of their own anatomy. Male and female created he them and called his name Adam. In any case, when he stood up and began to walk, he began to move around and began to name the animals and begin to subdue and have dominion without any wife at all. Now, women, here's a footnote for you to understand. This is why men tend to be more occupational, while you tend to be more relational, because Adam functioned in his occupation when he had no relation. So whereas you get a lot of your self-esteem from relationship, we get ours from occupation. And whenever we get in a bull session, the first thing we want to know is let each other know who we are. If you see us on the airplane together and we're sitting beside each other, we say to, well, Holloway, what do you do for a living? Well, I work for Allstate Insurance Company. What do you do, Fred? Well, I work for Mutual of Omaha. Do you have a car? Yes, I have a car. Never gonna see each other again, but we just want each other to know, you know, this is what I do. I am somebody. Because for us, what we do determines how we see ourselves. That's why when the enemy attacks your job, sir, he has attacked your self-esteem, and there is no way you can feel good about yourself if you don't operate in an occupation. Men were created to have an occupation. We were created to subdue and to have dominion and to function in that capacity. And he had no woman, and he had a job. Look at the first PC hard drive software loaded database computer put in the earth long before Microsoft or IBM or Xerox came along. Look at Adam, created with megabytes and hard drive. He was able to name all of the animals without a pencil or a piece of paper, without an icon to click on. He categorized and named and filed and remembered all the names of the animals, not duplicating any name over again. He stood and named every one of them and filed it in his database and put it away in his head and could call it up in his computer whenever he got ready to do it. And when he had named every living species that existed in the water, in the air, on the ground, in the earth, anywhere, finally he looked at God and said, there was not found for me a suitable helpmeet. And for the first time, heaven got quiet, because for the first time in the creatorial process of God, God said something that he did was not good. For everything else God did, he said it was good. He created the day and the night, and the evening and the morning were the first day, and God said it was good. He separated the firmaments that were above the waters from the firmaments that were beneath the water. And God stood back on the second day and said it was good. And God spoke to the sea and said, bring forth. And it began to bring forth. And he spoke to the earth and said, bring forth. And the third day, and he said it was good. And God spoke to the air and said, let there be fowl in the air, and let there be fish in the sea. And the end of the fifth day, God said it was good. And on the sixth day, God created man from the dust of the earth and breathed in him the breath of life. He became a living soul. And God said it was good and very good. On the seventh day, he rested. Everything God said he'd done was good, until Adam said, I've not found a suitable helpmeet for me. And God said, it is not good for man to be. Alone. And so he says, wait a minute, Adam. This is one thing. I got to make a little alteration. I made you too much like me. I made you all own. All one. And you can't handle walking around like me, self-contained. All sufficient in yourself, needing nothing outside of yourself to get along, able to perform, able to create within the auspices of your own authority without camaraderie, relationship or companionship. It is not good for you to be all alone. lay down and go to sleep. But shh, Adam, be still. Don't worry. I won't have to reach into the earth again and get strange flesh for you to couple with. Because I made you so much like me, man, that everything you will ever need is already in you. Shh, let me show you. I'm going to reach in you and pull out of you what you need. And here we see the first birth, not through the womb of a woman, but through the womb of a man. And he pulls Eve out of the side of the man. And when he looks over at her, he sees her and he says, my God, look at that. He said, didn't none of them animals look like that? Not the gators, the crocodiles, the foxes, the lambs, the bushes, it's all. But it was not her beautiful, curvaceous, voluptuous flesh that intrigued him the most, because he doesn't mention that. He says, look at her. She is my body. She is me with the womb. She is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. When I think about loving her, I think about loving myself. I'm going to call her woman. I'm going to call her me with an opening. Me with a womb. And for this cause shall a man leave his mother and father. Because you see, she was taken out of him, meaning something was missing from him, and she was the missing part of him. And when he held her, he was complete. And for this cause shall he leave his mother and father and take unto him a wife, and they shall cleave and become what they were before. That's why God forbids the coupling of men. Because we are forbidden from bringing together something that was not joined before. The coming together of the man and the woman is a physical depiction of something that is holy and awesome, and it is cataclysmic and explosive and surrounded and celebrated up under the auspices of sexual intimacy, and forbidden not only from men to men, but forbidden from men to women who are not in covenant with each other. This is covenant together, because when we come together, it is a celebration that is supposed to occur so often that if you get ready to fast, you can't do it without asking me. And God said, don't fast long lest you defraud my body, because your body is my body and your stuff is mine and mine is yours. And whenever we come together, we crescendo and come together in a love embrace. And to this end, watch this, because I'm going somewhere. To this end, God creates the crescendo of sexual intimacy. It is unlike any other physical need in the body. It's not like drinking water. I need it, but it don't feel the same. It's not like eating food. I need it, but it don't feel the same. But when I have sex with my wife, my covenant partner, it takes me to another zone, because there is an element of celebration, because what it celebrates is that it is the rejoining of what God formed in Adam. It is the coming together of who we were before, and God puts a thunder around it and an applaud around it and a great crescendo around it that is so powerful. And right when I think Paul is teaching about marriage, he freaks on me again and said, I'm not speaking unto you about marriage. He said, but I speak unto you regarding Christ and the church. I mean, I was right in the middle of sex. I mean, we was one flesh. Chase. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Christ and the church.